Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is a beautiful fall day here in the Twin Cities. I am in Eden Prairie today. It's the Shaletta Show, and we are having an amazing afternoon. I am at the Frazier Autism Center in Eden Prairie with several members of their staff, along with some folks on my team. And we have given away 100 interior and door locks. For families who have children with autism who wander. After an 11-year-old boy in this community wandered away and drowned. So many community members here in Eden Prairie who have kids with special needs came to the event. We had an ice cream truck. We had coloring sheets. We were spreading love with those Amazon locks. I purchased them. So many people, good listeners or good neighbors like Jim Planton and so many others who bought locks, Chad Hartman, and had them delivered to my home so that I could bring them here and bless as many families as I could. And I tell you, we were here from 10 to noon and families drove up. They brought their kids. The Frazier folks were here so the parents could talk and eat ice cream and know that their children were safe. We just had an amazing time loving on each other and blessing folks in the community. And that's really what it's all about. That's what being a good neighbor looks like. I'm in Cottage Grove. But who is my neighbor? My neighbor is the person who's hurting. My neighbor is the person who needs help. So whether they live near me or they live in Eden Prairie, I'm going to show up for the people who are hurting. And I'm so honored that Frazier partnered with me on this. And I'm still here. I'm going to be broadcasting my show live in Eden Prairie because there was no way for me to get from Eden Prairie all the way to downtown Minneapolis, or Cottage Grove, in order to do this show. So they've been kind enough to allow me to set up my studio in their building and do this show. And the staff is staying 3 hours after our event is over so that I can do this show and broadcast to you today. So thank you so much for listening. And I'm so excited that Michelina Rains, the executive administrator over here at the Frazier Autism Center in Eden Prairie, is joining us on this show. And it is such a blessing to have you here, Michelina. Talk to us about why Frazier opened their doors to us.
Shaletta, thank you so much for having me. I just appreciate it. It's such a wonderful privilege. We know the difference that it makes in the families' lives, just knowing that there's support out there, that they're not alone. We're happy to help. Thank you.
And thank you, Michelina, for being here. And you not only came, you brought your daughter. She right. was helping the kids. She was helping with the coloring sheets. She walked them over to get mm-hmm. ice cream and made sure they were safe. Talk to me about, you know, the role that Frazier plays, not just in this Eden Prairie community, but, you mm-hmm. know, it throughout the Twin Cities.
Throughout the Twin Cities, right. So Sakura, my daughter, helped as well today to volunteer. She actually does get services through Frazier as well as her brother. And so if you don't realize how the difference it makes just in my own family's life, but in the friends and families that we met today that came up for the event today for the locks, the door locks. And it's not just in, you know, in Eden Prairie. There's facilities then in Bloomington, in Richfield, you know, throughout the Twin Cities here. And if you go on the website, you can see the services as well for the different age groups. And it depends on where kids are at in their life. There might be a need for one thing that might not be at the same need for another child. So it really is looking and seeing what kind of supports and how we can help and just build on our community.
Yeah,
but we're happy to be here. Thank you.
There was so much community building, and you know, when this little 11-year-old boy wandered away from his home and drowned, I knew I wanted to do a lock donation giveaway, and I looked at some facilities in Eden Prairie, and a lot of them said you have to live here in order to, you know, rent this facility, in order to, you know, have an event here. And I called you all, and there was just no hesitation. You all not only opened your doors to us to come and set up and give away these locks today. But you also had, you know, some of your staff members here, and they were working. They were making sure kids mm-hmm. didn't escape. They were coloring with them. They were pretty much running therapy sessions outside in the parking lot. I mean, I could hardly greet all the people who came because I was just so impressed with the services that the staff members were providing so that these parents could have a 5-minute break to learn about how to install the lock, or a 2 or 3 minute break to meet another parent who has a child with autism who knows about, you know, some resources or services that they didn't know about. And so it was just a beautiful event, not only to pass out these locks and save lives, but I don't know about you, but the community and bridge building and connections that were being made this morning is really what blew me away.
It was just wonderful, Shaletta. You know, just you really get the sense of parents and the service providers for Frazier. They treat these kids just as they were their own, or they knew them personally and could see that, you know, if a child was hesitant of even coming up or coloring, you know, it was just meeting them where they were at and just being gracious, you know, because we just don't understand where everybody's coming from. But if you just meet people where they're at and just... It really did show the love, and it is wonderful.
Now, there's some parents who are listening, and they're saying, you know, I just moved to the Twin Cities. What is Frazier? We met so many moms and dads today who said, you know, I moved to Minnesota from Georgia and other parts of the country because there were better services here. I heard about them from friends of mine. And now that I'm here, I've got to get connected. I've got to get plugged in. Talk to me about Frazier for a minute, if you will, about the services you provide and how anybody who's listening who has a child or a grandchild with autism can get connected to you.
Well, that's wonderful. So Frazier has a history started back from 1935. Lois Whitlock Beck Frazier, she founded a school to teach children with disabilities who would have otherwise been institutionalized. So when we look at how far we've come, now we have services that are in community. If you are wondering if Frazier is for you, you can go onto our website. Actually, it's at Frazier.org, Frazer.org, to find out more and the services that we provide and the age groups and how to really what Frazier is trying to like just be a future for, you know, mental health care and to help also with anyone that has the need to find that support for them and for their families too, for their growth. And if we can help them, there's a number that you can call that's on our website for Frazier services and get connected.
Well, I am just so grateful for Frazier, for what you do in this community. You don't just help these children, but you educate so many families. You're a beacon of light and hope. And it was so amazing. And I'm so proud that we got a chance to partner together for the Spread Love with Locks campaign here in Eden Prairie after the 11-year-old boy with autism wandered away and drowned, to keep kids safe. Michaelina, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here. Appreciate it.
All right. And thank you for having such a great daughter. She was so amazing and so helpful at 13 years old. I'm sure she could have slept in and played video games and talked to her friends. But instead, she was in a cold parking lot playing with 2-year-old kids and walking them over to get ice cream and coloring with them. You are a great mom. And I'm so grateful that your daughter was here today to help us out.
Thank you. She's here. She's sitting right now with me right now in this interview room, and she hears exactly what you're saying. And I'm sure that it did make a difference even for her, because she could have slept in. You're right. She wanted to sleep in today.
And, you know, when those kids came and they saw another kid, it wasn't just adults. I just saw the relief on their faces. I saw them connecting with her. I saw her connecting with them. It was beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. And you all stick around. We've got more to come. We are just a few days away. Just a few days away from electing the next president of the United States of America. It is 12:21. You are listening to The Shaletta Show. My name is Shaletta Brundage, and I am the host of the show. Josh Wheeler is at the historic WCCO radio studio, making sure our guests get in and out on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker hotline. And Al Schock is in the WCCO newsroom, the award-winning newsroom, bringing you the latest on news and information as it develops in our community. And Tuesday's coming. Tuesday is happening. It is almost here. Billions of dollars have been raised. We have seen messages ad nauseum from sun up to sundown. My mailbox is filled with flyers. Okay, let me just say, we don't know who is going to win this race yet, but I can tell you who has already won: printers. Yeah, if you have gone to your mailbox in the past 2 or 3 months, the printers are winning. The ink, oh my God, there should be an ink shortage, because every time I open my mailbox, I have 20 flyers telling me who I should vote for, who I should not vote for, any of the policies that I need to know about, any of the information, who supports that policy from both sides, Republican and Democrat. And so, printers are looking good right now. Printers are coming out on top. They have met their quota for the month for sure. But what is going to happen on Tuesday? Do we have any predictions? Is there a sure thing? Will we have a winner by the end of the night? Will we wake up Wednesday with a new president, or will we still be counting hanging chads? I'm going to ask those questions of my friend and political analyst, Brian McDaniel with Hilden Advocacy and Law. You've seen him on Tom Hauser's At Issue. You've seen him on Twin Cities Public Television's Almanac, hanging out with Kathy Werzer and Eric Escala. And if he's good enough to talk politics with Tom Hauser, Kathy, and Eric, he's good enough to be on the show. That is a prerequisite and qualifies you, sir, to hang out with me for a couple of segments to talk about this election.
Well, I am certainly privileged to be on your program, as well as those other ones. I'm telling you, this will be my 25th year working at the Capitol, with several volunteer campaign years before that. Uh-huh. And, Ms. Shaletta, I am so tired of this. Make it stop. Oh, my gosh. I wish it was Tuesday, because as important and just, life-altering as, all elections are, but this one, as much as any, as important as it is, we are so weary. We need to get this over with. I, for one, don't think Tuesday can get here quick enough.
Do you think that's going to have an impact on on the polls? Do you think that people are just so worn out and so tired that they're going to be like, you know what? I'm shutting it off. I'm not paying attention. I'm turning it off. I'm unplugging. I'm not checking my mail. This is too much. I have my own issues to deal with, and I just can't take another thing. I'm battle weary.
You know what? I think it does, and probably, you know, with these two candidates, you know, more than most. You know, there certainly are large numbers of people who consider themselves political independents. However, when it comes to Harris and Trump, the Republicans are going to vote for the Republican, and the Democrats are going to vote for the Democrat, and then a lot of people are going to just not vote. They might vote for other races, or they might vote for a third-party candidate. But, you know, as we saw in 2016, Donald Trump didn't get more votes, you know, by any kind of large margin, more than Mitt Romney did. It's that Hillary got fewer votes, which means the Democrats didn't vote for the Democrat. And I think in this race, much like 2016, if Democrats vote for the Democrat will win. And I think that is the fear that that kind of political pundits and operatives on the progressive side have, is that, you know, there's no doubt people have made up their mind one way or the other about Donald Trump. They've either decided that, you know, his shenanigans are either something that they're comfortable with or not comfortable with. You know, there aren't people that say, oh, one more felony and then I'm out. I mean, that's not what they're saying. But, you know, a lot of people are saying that Kamala Harris didn't necessarily make the case of what, you know, she made the case that she's different than Donald Trump, but she didn't necessarily make the case that she's different than Joe Biden. And I think that is what is maybe concerning to some of the younger progressive people, because Joe Biden was not very popular with younger people. You know, they look at what's happening in the Middle East and they have a lot of concern there. And, you know, we can get to predictions in a little bit, but if Vice President Harris doesn't win, I think that was a mistake. Not that she didn't run well against Trump, but that she didn't run well against Joe Biden.
Okay, why didn't she separate herself from him? Did she felt like it was going to be disrespectful? Did she decide, I'm going to, you know, just give him a little bit more respect, and I'm not going to say that he did anything wrong because I don't want him to be upset and I want him to go on off to glory, with all, you know, everything intact? Because she had several opportunities to say what she would have done differently, Okay, first of all, I know black women. I just happen to be one, right? Yeah. And so I'm an expert on black women's body language. And she was at The View and they asked her, what would you have done differently? And she hesitated. And she had something that she wanted to say, but she didn't say it. And that's, I think that stinged her when it comes to undecided voters.
Yeah, and this is just the bad position that she is put in that, one, everything you said is true. I mean, she probably has personal affection for President Biden and, you know, doesn't, you know, to a certain extent, we all know he is impaired. And so you don't want to speak ill of somebody as they're, you know, obviously having, you know, legitimate problems. And she probably does have legitimate, you know, personal affection for him. But also, she was vice president this whole time. So if she says, well, I think Biden did this, 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 and this wrong, it really opens her up to, so you really weren't involved. You were not part of the process. You were not having any kind of influence over the president or his policies, even as we saw that he was not necessarily up to the job at the very end.
So, but this is the thing. How can we expect like a vice presidential candidate to really have that much say? We saw Donald Trump, you know, leaving Mike Pence out there to be lynched. So the vice president is like, you know, and I think too, Brian, that you know, has she said something bad about him, or not necessarily bad, has she said, listen, he did a lot of amazing things, but here are the things that I would have changed. I think it would have been a who the hell does she think she is moment. And I think some of those old guard Democrats would have turned against her like they turned against Dean Phillips.
Yeah, well, and no one is saying, certainly not me, is saying it's fair. It's just the bad position that she was put in. And you know, name a vice president that kind of people looked at and said, all right, that person did the job of the president. I mean, the closest we came was Dick Cheney with George W. Bush, and people right. didn't necessarily like that either, because it was, why is the vice president having so much power? So it's just one of the you know, and we see this with Lieutenant Governor Flanagan too. To a certain extent, you have responsibility without authority, and that's a very hard place to be.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Okay. A hard place to be is up against the clock. We're going to take a quick break, but we're going to come back with Brian McDaniel from Hilden Advocacy and Law, because I have a theory. People say, how is the race so close? Oh, my God. Kamala Harris is absolutely more presidential. Donald Trump has dementia. I can't believe people would vote for him after what he said and what he did. And why is this race so close? It looks like he might even win. You know what? I got one word that will tell you and describe to you why this race is so close. And that word is racism. We'll be right back. My friend Brian McDaniel from Hilden Advocacy and Law said that folks are weary and worn out, tired of all the negative commercials and the flyers and the radio ads and the text messages and the emails and the conversations that they have to have around the water cooler and with their family and at their churches and synagogues and mosques about this election. It has taken over our lives. Most of us feel like we're running for president. We're so involved in it. But some people have checked out. Like Brian said, they are tired. They are weary. They are worn. And I have talked to Black women who are just, they've checked out. They said, I cannot believe the insults. Calling a grown adult woman a girl. That is what they used to do in Mississippi. Back in the 1950s and 60s and 70s. Saying that Black women are dumb and stupid and have a low IQ when they've graduated from Harvard and have a law degree. Okay? Howard and have a law degree. Saying these things about Black women being lazy. That reflects on all of us. How are we going to go into the workplace? If you're saying that the woman who is running for president of the United States of America is lazy and has a low IQ and you call her a girl, how do I, as a Black woman, show up and defend myself, defend my beliefs, defend my education, defend my reputation, defend my name? And so where this election should have been a source of pride and celebration, not just for Black women, but for all women, as we break glass ceilings and run for an office that was traditionally supposed to be suited for a white man and have a fighting chance of winning, it's a source of trauma and pain and frustration. And so, Brian, when people ask me how is the race so close, I have just one word for them, and that word is racism. If Kamala Harris had the qualifications that she has as a white man, she would not. This would be a landslide. This would be laughable. This race would not be as close as it is. And if anybody says otherwise, I have a bridge in Brooklyn that I would like to sell you. And I have this magical beanstalk that you can plant in your backyard where you can grow money. Mm-hmm.
Well, I certainly think that, you know, there maybe needs to be a second word, and that's sexism. And I think that you can't deny that you know, what is expected of a female candidate is certainly different than what is expected of a male candidate. And let's, you know, let's not just talk about Vice President Harris. Let's talk about Secretary Clinton. They were both very qualified, but ultimately deemed unlikable in certain ways. And then let's not just have it be a female thing, but let's look at, you know, prior to being president himself, previously, what were Donald Trump's qualifications to have the most powerful position in the world, arguably? What were they? And let's not even make it a white man Republican issue. Barack Obama was a one-term senator. He did not have, impressive credentials. People didn't know who he was. My family is, I grew up, in Illinois. Almost all of my family is there. When Barack Obama started running for president, even they were kind of like, who does this guy think he is? I can remember my grandmother saying, Obama doesn't know what he's talking about, but he's better than the other guy. So to a certain extent, you're not wrong. With the racism and the sexism has something to do with this. And one of the things I say is that I think when we talk about racism and sexism, we're thinking about, the good old boys, in the South, but the Democrats don't need those people. The Democrats need Democrats to vote for Democrats. So it is the marginal Democrats who either stay home or vote for somebody else who really kind of need to do the gut check on what they're willing to what they're willing to accept in their candidate. People who have listened to your show before know my background is Republican. I am not a Trump person. I never have been, and I'm not going to be this election either. I'm not speaking this as a Democrat. I'm speaking this as somebody who has been a Republican, their whole adult life. But it's hard to understand how a Democrat would not look at the choices that they have here and say there is a clear choice. Now, obviously, if you're a Republican, if you're conservative, you have conservative values, yes, you might look at Vice President Harris and say, that's not what I want in a president. But for a Democrat to say, she's black, it's a woman, I can't do that. I mean, it's 2024.
It could be 2094. We are still fighting the same battles that my great-grandmother fought down in Houston, Texas in the 1930s and 40s that she told me about when I was a child. And here's the sad part about it. I'm going to just make it as plain as I can. Sometimes it be your own people. And we don't talk about this enough, but Malcolm X said it, and it still rings true. The most disrespected person in America is a black woman. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter what kind of qualifications this woman has. It doesn't matter where she went to school, where she got her degree, and what her pedigree is. Right? It does not. That doesn't matter. They still look at her and they see her gender. They see her ethnicity. They see the texture of her hair. They see that she pledged a black sorority and she went to a historically black college, and that automatically disqualifies her. And, people can make up all the excuses that they want. And I'm talking to the Democrats. They can make up all the excuses that they want. I'm not buying any of them. They can say, she doesn't have enough experience, or, she's just not the person for the job. She hasn't made it plain who she is. She hasn't laid out her agenda. That is BS. It is all because this woman is a black woman. And you can't say that out loud. You have to make up an excuse. You have to find something. I've heard young black men say, at least I know Trump is telling it to me like it is. I'm a Democrat, but I'm going to vote for Trump because, at least I know where he stands on the issues. This man has said out of his own mouth, I don't have a plan. And everybody walked away and said, okay. And then went to Kamala and said, your plan isn't detailed enough. And so for anybody who is a Democrat who is saying, you know, all these reasons why they're not voting for her, I challenge them to look in the mirror and do some soul searching. And you can keep on saying, well, this is the reason and that is the reason and this is the reason. But really, the reason is, if you're going to be honest with yourself on today, and on November the 2nd in the year of our Lord 2024, just go ahead, because you're thinking it, but we all know it. You're not voting for her because she is a black woman.
Well, and the polling, you know, and polling is garbage. We all know that.
But we all know polling is garbage.
Polling is garbage. But to the degree you can put any credence in it at all, black men and Hispanic men are voting for Harris in lower numbers than they did for Biden.
And that is, you know, so sad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Brian.
No, and that is something that, you know, in the event that Donald Trump wins, it's not that most black men or most Hispanic men are voting for Trump. That's not true. It's that there are fewer of them than for Biden, and in a country that is so evenly divided, that if you shave off a couple of percents here or there, that is the difference. And sometimes it's not that they're voting for Trump, it's that they're maybe not voting, or they're voting for a third party candidate.
And, you know, Obama led everybody in the group chat when he started talking about the lack of support, the lack of overwhelming support that Kamala Harris should have had from black men. And so many people were up in arms about it. And when we come back, Brian and I are going to talk about how President Obama led everybody into the family group chat and what it showed about black men and black women and the relationship and the issues that have been brewing for generations. We'll talk about that when we come back. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, LinkedIn, TikTok, Threads, Shaletta Brundage on everything except Twitter, where I am Shaletta is Funny. Follow me and I will follow you. And two of the women I follow, Angel Udine and Deidre here in Slack, two prominent women here in the Twin Cities. Not only are they fighting for equal rights and women's rights, their parents were freedom fighters, and they understand the importance of voting in elections. But they are talking about how tired they are of all the rhetoric. Not that they're going to not vote, but it's frustrating for them to see it play out. And President Obama, former President Obama, said the quiet part out loud. He talked about Kamala Harris's issues with black men. The Washington Post called him the scolder in chief. Bill Maher says the election is not looking that great for Harris and mocks the need to have Obama scold black men on voting. Obama, the New York Times headline, Obama admonishes admonishing tone to black men presents a risk for Democrats. But what he did, Brian, was talk about something that has been a problem for years that we have not addressed. And that is the lack of support for black women by black men. Black women stand behind, stand up for, fight for black men, but we do not get that in return. We do not get that in return in school. We don't get that in return at work. We do not get that in return in politics. We do not get that return in church. We do not get that return in community. And that has been the case for generations, and nobody has openly talked about it. And now it's festering, it's boiling, it's simmering, that top is bubbling over, and now the world is seeing what we have been quietly trying to deal with, is the fact that black women do not have the support of our men. They do not go to bat for us the way we go to bat for them. And now that issue is heading right into the ballot box, it's going right into the voting booths, and it is a problem.
Well, and it's certainly a self-fulfilling prophecy. As I said earlier, if Democrats vote for Democrats, Democrats win. And if you're going to argue that, well, a black woman can't win, but then black men don't vote for that black woman, well, that's why she didn't win. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy, and one that is, it's, I mean, we all know sociologically, it's not hard to understand what's going on, but politically, I mean, certainly I can make an argument that the progressive left hasn't made a good enough case to, I would say, African Americans of all genders that things improve dramatically by having Democrats in office. But that's a whole separate argument. But if we're going to concede that the Democratic Party is what is best for the African American community, then the question is if you're not willing to vote for a Democrat, if it is a black woman, well, who is being benefited by that? Or probably more specifically, who is being damaged by that? It's the community itself, if we are, you know, in agreement that the Democrats are better for that community. And so that is the part politically that is hard to understand. We all know, you know, the struggles between, you know, men and women going back and how things are better, but they're certainly not equal. But you would think that people would vote in their self-interest, and that doesn't seem to be what's happening.
And it is so frustrating, because then they'll turn around and say, you see, I told you she couldn't win. You can't. Yeah. We can't win without your support. We need black men to show up to the polls and do the right thing. And they're not doing that. And I'm not talking about some black men I don't know. I'm talking about black men I know. I'm sitting here having a conversation with them, and I'm blown away. I am absolutely blown away by what I'm hearing. And the problem is that, you know, leaders, black male leaders, don't want to make a big deal out of it. They're saying, you know, it's a small minority. It's a small few. That's all it takes, is a small few. Yep. And because we didn't deal with this problem before, because we didn't bring this to the forefront, because we didn't handle this internally, now we're seeing it show up on every major news outlet in the country. This conversation starts at home. This issue is resolved in house. This issue is resolved within the family. And now President Obama has opened the group chat to everybody. And now people are saying, what? I didn't know. Oh my God. And black women are saying, honey, this is something we've been dealing with all our lives. This is something that we have had to deal with in our marriage, with our fathers, with our brothers, with our cousins, with our black male bosses that should have had our back, with our black male preachers that didn't want black women to preach for years and wouldn't allow them into the pulpit. This is not a new phenomenon. And if we don't talk about it, this is going to keep happening. And because we didn't talk about it, now we're in the situation we're in now, Brian, where I'm the only one talking about it, because if you ask anybody else, they want to say it's not a problem. The black people in leadership want to say it's not an issue. It's just a few. All it takes is one. All it takes is one. And because we don't want to address it in a real concrete way, because we don't want to just dig and dive deep into this situation, now we have an issue where everybody else in the world is talking about it except us, because we still want to turn a blind eye to the fact that black men do not support black women the way that we support them. Period. Point blank. End of story. And I can tell you that because I am a black woman.
Well, and if it wouldn't have been Harris, let's just say that you know, the second option, the third option, the fourth option for the Democrats was not a black man. It was going to be a white man like Biden or Gavin Newsom, or it was going to be a white woman like Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan, mm-hmm. or someone like that. So it's not like Kamala Harris took the spot of a black man. That's not what happened. She took the spot of, not took the spot, but she got the nomination over a white man or a white woman. So, I mean, you know, certainly, you know, I'm not a white man. I'm the whitest man.
Now, Blois also got you on that.
You know me as well as anybody.
You're right behind Blois.
Yeah, so I can't speak intelligently on this. However, what I can say is that it does seem to be acting against the self-interest of the community, and that is one that I guess only the community itself can address.
And because we have not addressed it, because we have not talked about it. Give me one more minute, Josh, because we have not dealt with it. Now it's our laundry, our dirty laundry is walking into the pole, and now we have a problem. And here's the issue, Brian, is that, you know, some men in the black community want to keep black women in their place. You know, you can't rise too high. You can't make too much money. You can't be out there. You can't be doing what you're doing. What about your husband? Think about him. You know, that job, like you said, should be the job of a black man. You shouldn't outshine your brothers. And so this is something that we've had to deal with. And so we've had to, you know, acquiesce or not take the promotion or not get too high because we didn't want to offend our brothers or prop them up and rah-rah to give them an opportunity that we know should have gone for us. But now it's our turn. Now it's our time. And we need you to rah-rah for us. We need you to help us. We need you to support us. And they are not doing that. And it is the factor that could cost this black woman the election. And she should be able to lean and depend on black men. And she is not able to do that because of centuries old sexism. And it is horrifying that black women are still where we are today, all these years later. Brian, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you. We will chat on Tuesday. We will either laugh together or cry together or wait for these elections.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+. And we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Results to come in. And y'all don't have to wait. We've got 2 more hours of the Shaletta Show coming up.